afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And let's see. You can find everything about us at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got archives stretching back about 10 years. Today, we are going to do...
They're all free archives.
Free archives?
Yep.
And each show actually has all of the things we discussed, any links we referred to, information about our guest, sometimes how to contact them, depending on who it is, articles that they've written, that kind of thing. And so that's all on there with commercial-free sound recording. So you got an MP3 recording for the whole show, one for each hour. You've got options and choices. We've also put up kind of a, I don't know what you call it, we've clumped, I guess, shows on the same topic at the top of the page for you. So China, South Africa, because we've done a bunch on both of those. And we also have our guest, Dr. Chen, coming back in, I think it's like 2 weeks. He's going to come back and talk about his personal story of leaving China and get back into the Chinese Communist Party and all the things that connect with that. So that'll be pretty interesting. We've done a lot of shows on Islam. We've apparently done enough shows on Islam with our guest Peter Friedman that he was unable to attend a conference that we'll be hosting here in Reading on the 14th of September. This show is coming out live September 8th, 2019. Mm-hmm. So in case we re-air it, this announcement will no longer be valid in the future.
Yeah, don't call.
Yeah. So I hate doing announcements that are not, that are not good forever, but anyway, it happens sometimes. So
well, if you go to the website or the website, you can also go on our chat. We have a chat.
Oh, I forgot about the chat. Bill's in charge of the chat. So if you link up to the show and you're going to listen online, you can, even if you don't listen online, you can go online and hook up to the chat room. That would be helpful if you have any questions or any of that good stuff. And, okay, so back to the conference part that I'm trying to bring up because we were having – I know we don't sound rushed. We're doing a pretty good job of not sounding rushed. Not that I think anyone cares because, frankly, I think when we wind up rushed, it's sort of funny, but that's just me. Okay, bringing this up. Constitution Day, there is a program, September 14th, 2019. It will be held at Shasta Bible College. And they are not the ones putting it on. It will be hosted by the Eagle Forum of California. It is $30 a head, includes lunch. Lunch will come from Fat Daddy's Barbecue here in Reading. They do a great job. And for maybe that minority of you that are like me that are not big barbecue sauce fans, I'm not kidding you. Actually, their stuff is amazing. They do a really good job. It'll be a great lunch. So it's all on the lunch. Now I can tell you who's speaking. Here we go. Mr. David Nichols, he's the president and professor of theology at Shasta Bible College. So these are all people who will be speaking on themes connected to the Constitution. Obviously, we're not going to go through the entire Constitution because it's only one day from like 9 to 5. Attorney Brad Dacus with Pacific Justice Institute, he'll be here. He's not up here that often. So that'll be amazing. And he is going to be speaking on the attack on morality in our state schools from the new health standards and the attack on our religious rights. So that'll be fantastic. David Nichols, actually, his topic is why religion and morality are so important in preserving our Constitution. We will have Dr. Philip Drum, who we have done a bunch of shows with. If you go to the POT tab on wethepeopleradio.us, you will see shows with Dr. Philip Drum. He will be discussing the attack on morality from the drug culture. Super interesting. For those of you who have listened to our shows on China, obviously I had sort of a hand in, you know, inviting people. It was kind of fun. June Gilliam, she was raised in Shanghai, China, and we have spoken with her too. The threat of communism, the dangerous trends in America today as communism is being promoted amongst our youth. Then we were supposed to have Peter Friedman come on and discuss Islam and the Second Amendment. However, he received some unpleasant phone calls and had his computer hacked and all sorts of stuff. So the left is alive and well. The speaker on that will be Captain Philip Graff, former 82nd Airborne paratrooper and training officer.
So he won't be coming.
So Peter Friedman won't be there, right. But Captain Philip Graff will be standing in on that particular topic. Why the Second Amendment is so vital. For preserving the U.S. Constitution and its God-given rights. So that'll be super interesting. And then we have Orlene Curla, The History and Importance of Property Rights in Preserving Liberties and How They Are Under Attack. Our friend Debbie Bacciacalupi, Seeing with 2020 Vision at Agenda 2030. So that'll be awesome. And I'm going to put this registration form right there online for you. If you need a copy of it or you have questions of any kind, you can give me a call. Phone number's on the web, but I'll give it to you here in just a second if you're scrambling for a pen. And you can go download the form. You don't have to mail in registration. If you just could call me ahead of time, that would really help, and we could let the lunch guys know how many heads we'll have there. But the information can all be gathered at wethepeopleradio.us. You can phone me at 530-515-7135. And the email is easy. It's Aaron at wethepeopleradio.us. And that is all online in case you need it at our website.
Wow. That was a lot.
I know. It was a lot. But there's no way to do that swiftly. So it's the Constitution Day program, and it's the 14th. So it's coming right up. And I do hope you'll attend. If you live anywhere near Reading or you have friends in Reading, send them. It'll be awesome. How are we doing on Skype in there?
We got our new
friend Jason. Are we all good?
Yeah, we're good to go.
There's been a lot going on.
Call me Jason.
So our guest Harry Booyans is with us because there are things going on in South Africa. There's always something going on there. I think those of you who listen to the program have figured that out pretty quickly. There's always something happening in South Africa, and most of it really pretty much not good, obviously. But today we've got part 11 of our series on South Africa. This is what happens when you invite the rest of Africa to share the spoils. I don't know. I would say more of the same, but that's not really true. Harry has given us some information to put online for you about the violence that has erupted. Phone's ringing. Things are happening. What are you smoke signaling me? Bill's smoke signaling me. We're in a very hot room. The air conditioner here is still broken.
I can't talk. I'll overheat. we have no air conditioning again today.
Well, we kind of do. Warm. There's a floor air conditioner, so it's great. But, you know, when you get into a building that has a whole bunch of different tenants and you have an air conditioning failure, apparently.
When I was a child, I had a fan in my bedroom, too.
I didn't.
They tried to convince me that that would really cool you off.
Yeah, well, in our house in Connecticut, we had five kids and we had one fan in one window. And, you know, to this day, I'm wondering why we didn't use our paper route money to buy another one. We apparently were stupid. So, had some perverse need to sweat a lot. All right. Let's see. How about we say hi to our guest, Harry Booyans. Let him give us a little snippet here, and then we'll do a quick break here in a minute. Does that work for you, Harry?
Yeah, I will.
Ooh, you sound lovely.
Hi, Bo. Hi, Aaron.
You sound like you're here.
I am all here. I'm not always all there. I am struggling with a bit of an echo. Ah, thank you. The sound engineer has removed that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Jason's our engineer today, just so we know who to thank and blame.
I guess the subject today is the fact that there's yet another kind of eruption in South Africa. And this time the banner headline reads xenophobia. And it's really a case of South African black people in particular going after with extreme violence against people from elsewhere in Africa whom they see as taking their jobs and their opportunities and their lives and you name it. And that's been a recurring thing ever since about 2008. And I've lined up a couple of clips for today that we'd be able to play so you can hear some of the stuff firsthand. And then I believe the intention is that I go back a little bit through the history to try and explain where does this propensity for violence come from.
That sounds good.
I think that would be important because what we are, you know, I didn't talk to you about it ahead of time, but There was all that controversy this week. Most people would have, it's not South Africa, but it's still Africa. The tweet that came out from the embassy, if you want to touch on any of that and why that was so misguided. I really think that we are not plugged in this country, because I don't think our media covers Africa very well, the entire continent, the countries in Africa. I don't think they do a good job, and I think we've done a very poor job on South Africa in particular. So feel free to weave any of that in. We're going to take a really quick break, and then we'll come right back and do all of those things with our guest, Harry Booyans, and we'll actually tell you about him. How about that? We'll do that when we come back, too. Just got a lot of things going at the same time right now. I got 2 minutes to get it all sorted out. We'll be right back. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. For more bad news. But honestly, it does keep coming. So I guess we'll do our, how about this? We'll just do our engineering on the air, because it's just so much easier trying to do all this covert message sending. It's tricky and complicated. So we just we have to let you know, Harry, that anytime there's music playing, we can hear whatever's open on your end, typing, talking, anything. So just a little heads up there by way of transparency. So, you know, if you think we're being dummies and then the music starts and you go, man, these guys are dummies, like, we're totally going to hear that, which would actually be really super funny. But, you know, just wanted you to know. So our guest here.
I can actually not hear a thing during the commercial. So
I know. The bad part is, see, we can hear you. It's good. Okay, it's all those programs we've been doing on China, actually. We're picking some stuff up. Getting some hot tips through the back door.
There you go.
But yeah, the Skype channel and the music use the same channel, so you can't mute one without muting both, so you can't play music without hearing who's on Skype. So, odd. So let's tell people a little bit about you in case they have missed the previous 10 episodes over the course of the last, I don't know, few years. How long have we been doing this? A couple of years, maybe?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years, I think.
So our guest, Harry Booyans, is an internationally recognized multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. Lest you thought we were just chatting with just anybody. Now, he is an aerospace physicist, unlike Bill and I, who can say aerospace physicist, but that's where it ends.
That's what Harry and I talk about offline, is getting into the aerospace.
Is aerospace, yeah, you've been chatting with him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's totally been happening. Yeah. And Harry is originally from South Africa with a 360-year bloodline in that country. So he's not just, you know, a guy who read a book. He actually wrote a book. It's gigantic and extremely detailed, and it's wonderful. But his family comes from there for many, many years, 360 to be exact. He lives with his family in outside Vancouver, Canada at the time. But his life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. It included interaction with the United States, British defense establishment, and he applies his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy. So his book, says here in the bio, but it's totally true. He writes with factual accuracy and a very engaging style on all of these topics. Hard evidence is a trademark of his work and has won him a number of awards. His focus is on making Americans aware of what is happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between the two countries. That is just something I hope people focus on. And the warning that South Africa holds for Western civilization in general and the United States in particular. So there's no way to hit everything we've done previous as a recap, but it is important to talk about the actual history of South Africa, since most of us don't know anything about that.
Is that my cue?
That's you. That's you. It's all you, Harry. Now we've told people who you are, so just in case they're new.
Okay. So maybe I should do what I've done with all the previous shows and just spend a few seconds on a small handful of drop-dead important facts.
Good deal.
The first one is that pretty much every American I've met, excluding the few who by now know the story, they always assume that there were black folks lined up on the beach at Cape Town when the Dutch arrived in 1652. Nothing can be further from the truth. Here's the reality. There were no black people at the Cape when the Dutch settled in 1652. And my own earliest ancestor from Europe arrived in 1657. The nearest black people were around 700 miles away. And you can also gauge that by something else. It, in fact, took two generations of settlement at the Cape before white met black overland some 500 to 600 miles east of Cape Town. So that was 1702. So that's 50 years, two generations. It took a full five generations until 1780 before the first armed clash at Rustspot, which is the great Fisher River along the southeast coast. So, you know, if it takes you two generations to meet and it takes you five generations to clash, I would submit that one of the parties was not present anywhere near the Cape. That's kind of in the general nature of evidence in case you question the details. The next thing is that no indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. Not by the Dutch, not by the British, not by the French, not by the Swedes, not by the Portuguese. And the Portuguese were the main guys doing slavery, or slaving, I should say, up the coast of Africa further north. Here's the ironic bit. It is the white South Africans whose ancestors were slaves of the Dutch. They were often Indian or Indonesian, and I myself have a black West African slave ancestor. And that is why when I recently met with a black American family at the Air and Space Museum of all places in Washington, we were all hiding from the unbelievable heat. So we sat down and started talking. And I was very quick to point out to them that, look, I'm actually the African American at the table, and they are black Americans.
How'd that go over?
Say that again?
How was that received?
Oh, they loved it.
That's funny.
I've never met a black American who has not responded extremely favorably to that. And the folks have thanked me for it. I've had a couple come to me to come and thank me for making that statement from a stage. Because I usually add for people that, you know, basically if black folks make them uncomfortable, they ought perhaps not to go to Africa. And, you know, and quite frankly, I'm the African American. Can people stop stealing my title?
Mm-hmm. Cultural appropriation, I think, is what they refer to it
yeah,
as today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Although I think if people go on the website and look at your picture, that will be they'll be able to understand why that's kind of why it makes us chuckle.
Yeah. Well, look, I lived in New York before in 1980. Well, 79, I arrived there, and I tried to find a place to stay, and I finally phoned a lovely lady who was trying to rent out her home, and it was going to be too expensive for me anyway, but you know, she at one point she said to me, Harry, I got to ask you, are you black? And I told her, no, ma'am, I'm Lily White. Is that a problem? You know, somewhere back there, I just learned that I cannot just proceed as a normal guy who comes from South Africa and whose blood's been there for 360 years. There's always going to be an event of this nature, so I might as well precipitate it right up front and get it over with.
That makes sense.
It's like the ritual, you know, if I meet a group of Americans I met on a riverboat in Germany. They would sit down. The first question would be, where are you from? I'd say Canada. They say, really? You don't sound Canadian. I would say South African. And the next question would be, what do you think of President Obama? Yeah, there's these rituals that people have.
Wow.
The next important point is that there was an indigenous population. They're the Khoi people. And if you really want to have a description, a pictorial description of the Khoi people, they're tan-colored, okay? They're relatively small. You won't find such a thing as a six-foot Khoi person, not that I'm aware of. The ones at the Cape at the time the Dutch arrived, they were hunter-gatherers, okay? They did not do any form of, good Lord, I was going to say agriculture, but unfortunately that covers having cows as well. They kept some cattle, but they didn't plant a thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they grew no plants. The only problem is they were almost totally destroyed as a culture by the great smallpox epidemic of 1713. Though their DNA remains a strong component in the entire local makeup. I usually get this odd question when people start realizing what's up in South Africa. They say, but why don't you go back? And I wonder if, you know, how would you guys react if I told you, you know, if you're so unhappy with what's going on in the United States, why don't you go back by implication to Europe?
Right.
Okay. Where would you go back to?
Sure. Yeah,
because there is no back.
You don't have any right of return, and nor do we.
Right.
There is no such thing as right of return, and there hasn't been any since 1814 when our Dutch ancestors basically sold us to the Brits. Okay, they swap the Cape for another place, and the Brits pay them another, I think, £3 million. And in fact, per head, that was less than the going price of a slave in those days.
No kidding. Let's take a really quick break at this point, and then we'll come back.
Yeah.
And
hold that thought.
Yeah.
This is very interesting.
There you go. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Care how many times you listen to that clip from Dire Straits, it's still awesome. All righty. Back
good,
with
good riff.
And you were doing a good job playing it, Bill.
I was doing air drums.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why I run radio. It's a good thing. All right. Back to you, Harry.
All righty. I finished my little list of drop dead important facts about South Africa that people generally don't know or have exactly in reverse. We should move on to the topic of the day, which is really that there's all manner of upheaval in South Africa in this last week, and this time it has spilt over into other countries. And in the middle of all of this, Mugabe of Zimbabwe pegs off. Sorry, he passed away. I'm sure the world mourns the departure.
I just heard it on the news. He was a great man, and we were very sorry to hear of his passing.
Not.
Yes, yeah, you wanted to know from me. So let's get that point out of the way. You know, in the U.S., you've discovered that there's a lot of creatures lurking in your governmental woodwork whose loyalty is definitely not to the Constitution of the United States. And, you know, they have interesting names like, I don't know, Comey, McCabe, etc.
Yeah.
Seem to be more concerned about other factors than actually executing their jobs as listed by the Constitution. Now, I put it to you that most likely, after 8 years of Obama, I'm prepared to bet you that most of the woodwork in your African embassy is still the legacy of Obama. And when somebody comes out writing a tweet that extols the virtues, if you wish, of Mugabe upon his demise, then it would be somebody with that kind of background. So I can't speak for what exactly happened there, but I was approached for commentary by another party in the U.S. media, and I just felt that I don't think that previously in the world of international politics there was a person that the vast majority of humanity, you know, felt good upon his departure. That man has to be Mugabe. He was at the top of the pile of just the worst creatures on earth. And it's upsetting that Jimmy Carter thought that this man walked on water. But it pains me because, you know, I think in relatively modern politics, so I mean since 1970, we've had two major world leaders who were basic hard scientists. You know, one was Jimmy Carter and the other one is Angela Merkel. And the best thing that ever happened to Jimmy Carter was Obama. You know, I mean, it was that bad.
He can now be the number two worst instead of the worst.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And by the way, that comment was first made to me by a Democrat. And look what Angela Merkel went and done. You know, the Middle East boils over. Oh, don't worry. Just come to our country, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Great idea. That's worked out really well.
Made her hugely popular.
Yeah, that worked out real well for her. And so I'm sitting here as a hard scientist, a physicist, and I'm lamenting the fact that clearly my kind of breed of humanity makes particularly poor presidents. So I'll stop feeling sorry for myself for being surrounded by people of my ilk who apparently don't think straight. Can I leave that one there?
Yeah. We get it.
I think you pounded that nail all the way in. Excellent job.
Yeah, I think I actually hit my thumb in the process.
But we've talked about that a bunch of times. That honestly, if you can't find a little humor along the trail, the topic is really, really.
Well, you'll find that's the South African amongst the white folks. The humor is graveyard humor. It tends to be ironic and cynical, mm-hmm. and you have no choice because if you can't joke in the graveyard, you got nothing left.
Yep.
You know, that's where it is. Okay, so having stated that I cannot account for what folks were thinking in the U.S. Embassy in Zimbabwe when they issued a tweet that kind of kiss the feet of Mugabe. I have no idea except to speculate that it's Obama leftovers crawling around the woodwork there somewhere. I mean, after all, he was very successful at uniting Kenya and dividing the United States. Now, the matter of what's been happening in South Africa and that was so rudely interrupted by the timeliest demise of Mugabe. About a week ago, or just before last weekend, I should say, a taxi driver in my old town of Pretoria, down not far from the university campus area, he saw what is described as a, quote, Nigerian, unquote, drug dealer slash drug user doing something that he, the taxi driver, did not approve of, whatever it was. I don't know, and I don't want to embellish on that because I don't know. I'm not even sure about Nigerian, although they unfortunately do have that reputation in South Africa for being intensely strong around the drug industry. Now, he decided to do the unbelievable. He was going to make a citizen's arrest. So it is described to me. The citizen's arrest didn't work out great because the Nigerian guy shot and killed him. Killed him. I shouldn't say shot, though that is 99% sure, but he killed the taxi driver. This somehow became the last bit of tinder that set off a major fire within South Africa. And now I need to explain. There are lots of people in South Africa who feel that black folks who have come from other countries are coming to basically steal their jobs, steal their stuff. And it's got to the point where South Africa upon the face of the earth now is pretty much seen as the headquarters of xenophobia. And now, this is probably a weird phrase, but this is black-on-black xenophobia. So it is South African black people who resent the presence of black people from elsewhere in Africa. Now, the poor Zimbabweans who have already suffered under Mugabe, some of them fled to next-door Botswana, where they were given a hard time by the Tswanas. Some of them fled to South Africa, and they're given a hard time by the South African black people. Now, I'm going to play you a bunch of clips here in this process. I'm hoping you got them lined up there, Aaron. But I can confirm some of the statements made in those. So one of those that I'm going to confirm here, just to be nice and clear, is the people that I have met from Ghana are extremely hardworking. They're also rational people with whom I could speak, something I cannot always say about people in South Africa. I can also tell you that I have worked with people from Zambia. I have worked with people from Zimbabwe. And if truth be told, they actually want to work. They are concerned about the kinds of things that I'm concerned about as a member of Western society. All the folks want is an opportunity to do their thing, and generally, to be blunt, they run rings around South Africa's own indigenous black people. And that truthful message does not go down well. But you're going to hear it. Not from me. I'm just echoing what you're going to hear some of the black folks say. But I can confirm, I've lived it, I've seen it, I've experienced it, I've dealt with the folks. That's not to say that all South African black people do not want to work. That's not true. That would be a lie. All I'm saying is that the guys who have come all the way down the spine of Africa to come and work in South Africa generally did so with the intention of working. They were not told by what is now the South African government and used to be a terrorist organization, they were not told, like black South Africans were, that all they have to do is vote C, and then they will receive the jobs of white folks, they will receive the houses of white folks, they would receive the wives of white folks, they would be given credit cards so they can also just collect money out of a machine on a street corner. Okay, now when you're an uneducated person out of the depths of the bush of Zululand, you presumably do not understand how money gets to be in an ATM in the first place. But white people are known to go to strange machines on streets where they put a little plastic card in and then money appears. And that would be the very good thing to have. Okay. And that was the problem. You need to understand that you're dealing with something drastically different from what you deal with every day in the United States. So the folks don't know how it comes together. They don't know sometimes the very first things about where do jobs come from, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Makes them easy to manipulate and, yes, and mislead because, sure, wider economics isn't probably something that people are spending a lot of time pondering. Let's take a really quick break. We'll celebrate a little capitalism and then come back and return to our story. Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. We are here at We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans. We're talking about South Africa today. Harry, we've got all your clips queued up. Was there one that you wanted us to play, or you want to give us a... I know you were sort of giving us a lead-in on it.
Yeah, I'll get to that in just a minute.
All right.
Probably should now sketch just a little bit of the news coverage in that part of the world to get a feel for just what does it look like now. So this taxi driver was killed, and a bunch of South African mobs went on the rampage and started attacking foreign black workers. And here's what the picture looked like over this past weekend, a sort of a summary. South African police launch operation to verify foreigners in Pretoria, whatever that might mean. South Africa says arrests of 289, death toll stands at 5. Ghana confirms injury of 3 of its citizens and arrest of 5 others. Kenya says 2 of its citizens were killed. Nigerian finance minister slams his South African counterpart. Air Tanzania suspends flights to South Africa. Nigerian airline to airlift citizens back home for free. Local airline Air Peace offers free evacuation of Nigerians. Nigeria issues South Africa travel advisory. Botswana issues South Africa travel advisory. Reprisal attacks recorded in Lagos and Ibadan in Nigeria. South African shops looted. President Abuja of Nigeria issues statement calling for calm and restraint. Anti-South Africa protest in the Democratic Republic of Congo. MTN, biggest cell phone company in Africa, based in South Africa, shuts all its shops in Nigeria. Nigerian police beefs up security at SA businesses. South African embassy in Nigeria has been shut. SA High Commission in Zambia has been shut. Students torture sign at its entrance. Zambia shuts 3 South African-owned malls. Nigeria pulls out of World Economic Forum on Africa held in Cape Town. Zambian football body cancels match. Madagascar does same. Amnesty International says South Africa must do more to stop xenophobia. Southern African Development Community, the SADC, has voiced condemnation. So even the blanket Africa political bodies are turning on South Africa. Everybody's had enough of this murder and mayhem. And so, you know, I call it the chattering classes and liberal apologists grabbed for nearest intellectual crutch, and they decided xenophobia was going to be the word. I'm not sure that it's xenophobia, but we'll see. And that, you know, in a nutshell, shows you how South Africa, the supposed liberal leading light and rainbow nation and the example to all, has fallen flat on its face. There is nothing more to look up to it for. It has demonstrated complete abuse and destruction in all domains of human endeavor. There is nothing to look at South Africa for anymore other than as an example of what can happen to you. So with that as an intro, and with various folks having asked me to address the subject on other fora, I thought we should go and ask some of the actual Ghanaians who work in South Africa and who actually own businesses and who actually work hard what they think. And that would be clip number one, which is a car mechanic from Ghana lamenting that the black South Africans do not want to work. So it's not me, the suspect white guy, saying it. It's the Ghanaian guy.
That's
clip one.
Okay.
Of this garage. Why can't they come here? Like, please, I have a son who is 15 years or is 14 years. I want to give you this boy. It's like a school. What all that we are doing here, we learn it at school. I have a master that taught me at school in Ghana. So we'll be seeing them all around here with their fathers drinking together. And then at times I used to, please, why can't you give me this boy to train him to become a mechanic? Say, a nice cat. I don't have time for that.
The bottom line is laziness. People are lazy. People don't want to work. Simple as that.
Okay. It's ever so much better if a foreign individual who happens to be black says it and not me, the suspect white guy. I just have to live with the realization that it's, you know, an issue. But I'm not allowed to say it. So I'll rely on the Ghanaians. Clip 1B is a Zimbabwean chap who came to South Africa in 1991, which I need to remind folks was under white rule. And he's talking to Deutsche Welle, the German national radio carrier.
Late Nelson Mandela once spoke of South Africa as a rainbow nation. But is that still true? I'm here to find out the answer to that question, and the fastest way to do it is to take a taxi. Many taxi drivers are immigrants, and the first taxi I call is driven by one. His name is Best Moyo.
Okay, what kind of flag is that?
This is a Zimbabwean flag. I'm Zimbabwean. I came here in the early 1990s, around 1991. That's when I came to South Africa. And when I came, things were not as bad as it is now. Everything was still all right. I just came here as an immigrant, just trying to look for greener pastures like anyone else.
Best brought his family here from Zimbabwe a long time ago. He says he feels comfortable living in South Africa, but in recent years the mood has turned sharply against immigrants. That's something Best has experienced personally.
A group of people standing in the middle of the road with iron bars and rocks, and so they tried to flag me down just to pull me over. Then I just tried to drive and get away from them, but they started throwing rocks in the middle of the road. Then I realized that if I drive and just drive on over the rocks, then I will have a problem. Then I just jumped up, parked the car, stopped the car, and then I just ran away. They couldn't catch up with me.
Wow. Okay, I should point out that recording was in 2014, so this problem is not new, and I can't play you every clip I have on the subject, but trust me if I tell you that one person says very clearly everything was okay, and then in 2008 everything went wrong. Okay, so something happened somewhere just before 2008, and I shall return to that point. I have a further clip, clip number two, which is that comes from 2015. It's a young woman from Burundi. Now, I got to just explain this to you. North of South Africa is Zimbabwe. And then you get Zambia. And then northeast of that is Malawi. And then above that is Tanzania. And then above that is Uganda. And then in the northwestern corner of Uganda, sort of squashed in against the mountains, are Rwanda and Burundi. This girl got to South Africa overland from Burundi. And you may want to hear what she has to say. That's like going to Texas from Ecuador, okay? It's on the equator. Burundi is essentially on the equator.
On foot.
I'm not going to say that. All I'm going to say is she made her way down there.
Okay.
From Burundi, I came to South Africa because in Burundi they kill all of my family. It's my mother here, it's my small sisters. We came here in South Africa because in our country there was fighting. Even now as I'm talking to you, there's still a war. People are still dying. I came here because I think maybe South Africa is going to be the nicest country for me to live, to have peace and security. But it's not what I was thinking. I came here and they're chasing me. I don't know now what to do. I don't know where to go.
Not the warm welcome she was expecting.
Yeah. And so that's just a selection of clips of the views through the eyes of these so-called terrible foreigners. Okay? Now, to pause there just for a minute. In the old, supposedly horrible white Africa, where everybody was under the thumb of these evil white men, there was a thing called the border, and the border was patrolled. If you visited South Africa and you went to the Kruger National Park, you could actually go to that border, and what you would notice is that it was an electrified fence, and that fence was taken quite seriously. On the Zimbabwe border, which is actually a river, the Limpopo River, forests of sisal were planted. Sisal has got a very sharp, spindly, spiked leaf. So it's tough to get through that stuff. So the point I'm trying to make is the border was geared towards keeping people out. But millions of black people from various other countries came to work in South Africa, and it was done on an organized and orderly basis, and people got work done, and those people got paid.
We used to have that. Happened. I remember that.
We've got to
take a brief break here at Border, and we're going to come back with the Border. Our guest will be Dr. Harry Booyens in the next hour. We're discussing South Africa, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan,
and I'm Bill Cundiff, and we're in the midst of reprogramming our program.
Why does 5 minutes go so fast?
Because
why is 5 minutes when you're at the DMV take like 20 minutes, but yeah. 5 minutes when you're trying to fix something and
yeah. it turns into a 15-minute.
I don't
job.
Understand that.
Yeah,
time travel is real, and we just did it. So anyway, we were trying to separate our guest from the music. You know how that goes. We were trying to do complex engineering tasks.
Oh, it's easy. Anybody can do
it. We have one person here as an engineer. We got two dopes with laptops.
Like, I don't think that's a good idea. We should do that right now.
And our friend Harry Booyens in Canada. So, you know, we didn't make it as hard as we possibly could have. But, you know, we were right up there.
No. I'm here. I'm not necessarily all there.
but you are all that. So, that being said.
Do you need to switch at this point, or do we go ahead?
We'll just keep.
Yeah, we're fine.
We'll just keep struggling along. But we've incorporated as many This is like the Olympic gymnast routine. You know, we want to do the double hamel camel dismount. So we've got
we don't have enough math.
We got Skype. We got clips. We got video.
I'm pressing about six different things at once whenever we go to commercial. But we'll make it work. It's all good.
thank goodness you didn't have a snowblower when you were a kid.
Oh yeah, there goes a finger.
There goes a finger. Only East Coast kids get that joke.
just let me get this straight. You guys are entrusting your lives to a sound engineer?
Yes. And he's
please,
behind.
Don't tell him I'm smaller than him, okay?
Yeah, but he's, he looks good
he
in
does.
There.
He's does.
Got all the gear. He's got the headgear.
He has a beard. What could go wrong?
Microphone, big board.
We all know guys with beards get more stuff done.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody in here has got a beard except me, thank goodness.
I'm a lumberjack in my spare time.
But do you know the song?
I want to be a lumberjack.
Hey, you're playing with Canadian wares now.
Exactly. But does he sleep all night and work all day?
Yeah, there you go.
And the high heels. Yep, it's all over but that. Hey, you know, I wanted to let people know, too. So we're going to do some more of these really helpful, actually, clips that Harry has provided to us. And I wanted you to know they were all online. So they're on the page for today at wethepeopleradio.us. So if you're actually listening to us on the radio or some other way and you're not actually on our webpage and you wanted to go back and see the full context of those clips, you can go play them. We added them for you on the page. So our guest, in case you missed the first hour, which would be silly and bad, but in case you did, our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. He is a PhD, obviously, which makes the doctorness, and he's a defense and aerospace physicist retired. I don't know if you ever retire from that, but just keep thinking big thoughts. And he is originally from South Africa, and his family bloodline stretches back 360 years.
Well, they actually made a movie about Harry. I think it was called The Farmer Astronaut. He's actually building a rocket in his barn.
There you go.
Yeah.
I should tell you guys that I was born sort of at the end of the Korean War, when Britain was still under food rationing, and 4 years later, my mom picked me up on her arm outside our house. And she pointed out a star that was moving, and she explained that scientists put it up there. And I went and believed her, and so I became a scientist. And now I'm heading for 66, and I've told her the other day that I'm mad as hell at her because she taught me everything I needed to know about life before I went to high school. But there's two things she told me nothing about. You know, the one is women, and the other thing is what happens to guys when they go over 55.
But did you sign up for the one-way trip to Mars? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, that's the truly inexplicable one. Oh, man.
So I covered the views of the so-called foreigners, the guys who are being attacked in South Africa right now. Mm-hmm. And next I thought I should treat the view of the attackers, because they presumably have a view. Now, I want to tell you the next clip, which is number 3, is from a Sky News article of 2015, but it applies as much to right now as it did back then, because there's nothing new about the story. It's been happening repeatedly ever since about 2008, and there was another flare-up in 2015, another in 2017, another one now. They're just getting worse. That's the problem. Now, so clip 3 was a report by Sky News with a suitably blonde British reporter lady speaking to this bunch of guys, and I promise you, you do not wish to meet those guys in the dark, okay? So, clip 3.
These people, they work for 80 rand a day, 90 rand a day. It's fine for them because when you go to his country, it's a lot of money, but for us, it's too small, so we are no longer getting jobs anymore because of the salary we're looking for. Understand? These people, they are accepting small money, so they are ruining us in each and every side of ours. We attack them with knives, everything, machetes, man, because we are very, very angry because we can't accept that.
And what makes you think that's okay to attack another human being with a machete?
Because these people, if they attack us also, late time, they use these things, they use guns.
They also blame the foreigners for the high crime rate, and their version of justice is meted out pretty quickly.
Paraffin is easy to catch fire. It's flammable. If I put it on the tire is what? It's catching fire.
And, I put plastic, and you'll put there, this on the person?
And while we are beating you, you are very weak. I get it. You can't fight back. Even though
Wow.
I'm not sure if that last bit was clear enough to innocent Americans. They're talking about what in South Africa is referred to as necklacing, where you put a gasoline-soaked tire around the poor person's body and then you set it alight. You can't escape. You burn to death in a flaming sea of burning rubber. It's a uniquely South African torture. And, the lady was onto a question there that she should have gone further with, which is, what makes you think it's okay to attack people like that? Or in this way? What makes you think it's okay? And the answer, we're very angry.
Oh, well, okay. As long as you're really angry.
That clears it up.
Yeah, I guess that it's like the Antifa reasoning, right? They're very angry.
Yeah, but these guys make Antifa look like Cub Scouts.
Oh, yeah. So you could ask, given that we've played Julius Malema several times on previous shows, Julius Malema is the guy who dances on stage singing Kiss the Farmers. But the next clip is where he, as a guy with that reputation, actually acknowledges that South Africans are now worse off. Black South Africans are worse off than under apartheid. Clip 3B, please.
Of freedom is this, that 24 years into democracy, we are worse than the way we were during apartheid. The people want their land. The people want their wealth. They want to own.
Yeah, that's it. He'll go on about the rest of his demands, but that's the point. So there's the man himself, Mr. Monster himself, acknowledging that things are worse.
And why does he say that? I mean, what's the...
Because they are worse. There was never... You know, there's a BBC clip, which I will find again, because it demonstrates so many points so brilliantly. It displays the attitude of the BBC in the face of an ordinary black South African simply wanting to tell them the truth, and they will not accept the truth. And the black man is looking at the BBC reporter saying, maybe things will get better if the old government comes back. And the BBC guy says, what? You can't mean that. Those people treated you horribly, and I don't know what else. And then the black man responds and says, yes, but we always had jobs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the point is, the BBC kind of culture cannot process that statement. They don't understand how it can be that while South Africa had apartheid, how could it be that millions of black people from other countries streamed into the country to be there?
Yeah. Yeah, how bad was it?
Yeah, they cannot process it. It is such a shock to the system of a left liberal that the only thing they can do is to shut down any line of response in that general field, which is what the guy did. Okay? So... what I have next for you is, you've heard what the attackers say.
We've got to take a really quick break, and then we'll come back. I don't want to cut that in half. We'll do it all together.
Okay.
Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. We are discussing South Africa, and you're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Take a look, the diamond.
All righty. Okay. So right back to it. The next clip you were going to play for us.
So I'm working my way through a sort of a picture that says, what are the foreigners saying? What are the attackers saying? Mm-hmm. So what is the view of the guy who hates all white people in South Africa? So now let's go to the attitude of the police. And I thought what we should do is play you a clip of Bongani Mkhongi, who's the Deputy Minister of Police. And he was talking about foreigners and whites in 2017. The guy's still around in general. I'm not sure exactly what his job is today, but this is a clip from 2017. And listen to what this creature actually says, keeping in mind that he was Deputy Minister of Police. So this is the person to whom you have to look for your salvation if you are a foreigner or a white person in the country, okay? So that's clip four. I give you Bongani Mkhongi.
South Africans have surrendered their own city to the foreign nationals. The nation should discuss that particular question. You won't find South Africans in other countries dominating a city into 80%. Because if we do not debate that, that necessarily means the whole South Africa could be 80% dominated by foreign nationals. And the future president of South Africa could be a foreign national. We are surrendering our land. And it is not xenophobia to talk truth. We fought for this land. From a white minority, we cannot surrender it to the foreign nationals.
Okay. So clearly, the word we does not include foreigners and white people. Okay. If you had any doubt as to how he looks at the world, there you got it. So let's see what is going on, because when you go and look at the crowds that are descending on these poor foreigners, the one thing that strikes you as a South African pretty much immediately is there's a very big Zulu component, and possibly all Zulu. The next thing that strikes you is they're all young males somewhere between about 18 and 35, or mostly that. The next thing that strikes you is that in Johannesburg, they are mostly from the so-called hostels. What are these hostels about? They are male residential hostels for commuting workers who commute typically from Zululand or other home territories, and then they come to the Rand area around Joburg where they work on the mines or used to work on the mines. I mean, this government has reduced South Africa from number one gold producer to number eight. You can expect that the jobs are disappearing in the process. Now, so these folks, they grow up in Zululand, then they commute for 6 months, essentially, and they make some money. They send it back to the mother and the grandmother and the grandfather and the uncle and the aunt and the Lord knows the entire extended family. And they live in these hostels. And the present minister of police is himself a Zulu man, and his name is Bheki Cele. He's been around for a long time, and like most of these guys, he's been up on charges of corruption and fraud and all that kind of stuff. But he's what they got. And since he's got the credentials as a Zulu, he was asked to go and try and speak to these attackers. So I want you to listen to how he calls to this unruly crowd armed with, I got to explain what a knopkiri is. A knopkiri or knopkiri is essentially a walking stick cut from a piece of wood with a big fat knob at the one end, and you can fight somebody with that thing and crack his skull with it. So they're armed with knopkiris and machetes and all kinds of stuff like that. And this crowd is essentially dancing in front of him, because they dance when they're angry, they dance when they're happy, they dance when they're sad, everything's expressed in dance. So this crowd is in front of him, and Bheki Cele calls out a Zulu order to them, okay? And in this case, I'm afraid I'm not sure what he's saying, but listen how they respond as one man. It's important for you to pick that up. This is the Minister of Police talking to what is largely a Zulu mob, and listen to that single voice response. Clip 5. Okay, that's essentially it, you know. He calls out his one call in Zulu, and immediately you hear them respond as one man, okay? You will not get that from any other nation in South Africa. That's the Zulu.
Interesting.
Okay.
All right.
That's the Zulu.
Do we have to take another quick break?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Time is flying.
It's on us again. No, we're lying. It's only 125, right?
That doesn't feel right. That's too quick.
I thought so, too. I thought, okay, I'm time traveling again, but the wrong direction. The good direction. Okay, keep going. So, never mind.
So the point I wanted to get across here is that while folks are attempting to deny it, there is a strong hostile and Zulu component to this, which means hordes of young men together who can be marshaled to go and do stuff and who, as you can hear, can respond to an order.
Well, the Zulu have quite the history. I mean, I think even the most, somebody who has no education on Africa at all. I think, you know, you say Zulu and everybody's like, oh, yeah, I think I know something about those guys.
Yeah.
So
I think the real question to ask is, where does this come from? Because no amount of stealing somebody else's job or anything can account for the behavior. This thing of burning people to death and carrying on, where does this come from?
Well, and the crazy part is, and we've discussed this, you know, so I'm thinking about maybe somebody who hasn't heard any of the previous shows. The trick is they come in and, I mean, this is the great mistaken thought is that they're coming in and reclaiming their land, which is not true. And even when they, quote, reclaim it, okay, so they murder the farmer who's on the land, they don't stay there and farm it because they don't know how.
Correct.
So if they don't know how, they never did it in the first place, and they were never there. So those farms, you have detailed that nicely for us on previous programs, that land is just turning into nothingness and no productivity, and eventually we'll have this big famine down there and they'll all be starving and blah, 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 and it's because they killed the people who grew all the food.
Well, you know, you can either listen to me or you can listen to a lady. One day I'll find that clip for you again where she explains what she would do if they got some of that land. And her answer is, I will keep a goat and I can keep some chickens and I'll have food.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. It. Problem solved.
There you go. It's not. You don't have to believe me. You can just listen to her.
Right.
Okay. This is the frustration of, you know, the I don't quite know how to express this. I'm sorry. Let me put it to you like this, because I think we're going to be up against another little break just now. Peter Jackson, the guy who produced the movies, Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff, he also did another movie about the First World War. And I don't think many people know about it. It's a documentary, obviously. And at the end, as the credits are playing, you hear the voice of men talking about what it was like when they came home. And the one explained that you try to tell your friends and your family what it was like, what it is like, and if they show any interest at all, they don't understand anything anyway.
Right.
And after a while, you give up. That's us. That's us South Africans right there. It's your very distant family. They live in America. You try so hard to explain to them. If they're interested at all, it becomes clear that it's so far away from them that they struggle to get their heads around it. And after a while, you just give up and you await your fate. Okay, and I'm not prepared to give up yet. And thank you for hearing me out on this, on all these calls.
No, well, we appreciate it because, honestly, this is something that Americans really should pay attention to. We're looking at these at similar types of propaganda, really, happening in this country on, you know, who belongs where, who really has claim, who's better than who, who's more special than who, and that never turns out well. It is historically never turned out well.
And who is always offended and who is okay to offend?
I totally forgot about that. That's right. All the wounded birds out there.
Yeah.
We wound them every Sunday. It's kind of awesome, actually. It's kind of our magic.
I don't know if it's a break yet, but the next thing I would like to do is, where does this come from? And I'm going to go to two time periods. The one is the 1980s, and the other one is 1816 to 1836.
Nice. All right, we'll do that right on the back side. We are here visiting with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouillons. We're discussing South Africa, and you're tuned in to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Choosing your battles, pick yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front line, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, eh, cause this is Africa.
It's interesting. That was the 2010 World Cup song that became really well known. But they were mad because the lady singing it doesn't come from South Africa. They liked the song, but they didn't like the song because she wasn't from there. She's from Colombia or something.
And she didn't sound South African to me.
No, she isn't.
Okay.
She can dance, though, so apparently they let her in.
Our question is, where does this unbelievable propensity for violence come from? It's like it's more than anywhere else on earth. I cannot think where it has been this bad that I've ever read about. And I submit it comes from two things. The one thing is from way back, a event known as the Mfecane that took 20 years. And it was when the Zulu nation got born and basically ran over everybody else in one half of the country and much further up north, all the way to the equator through various African countries. I will get back to that one. But in the near past, the relevant period is the 1980s. And I thought instead of me talking a hell of a lot, I could play you two clips. The intro to the first one is that in the period 1980 to 1990, 1,040 black people were set alight by other black people in South Africa by various means. Of those burnt like that, 320 survived. That's around 1 in 3. 541 people were necklaced using flaming gasoline-soaked tires. Of those, only 36 survived. Now, the clip number 6 is an ex-ANC operative of that era, a comrade, as he calls himself. This comrade is interviewed, and he tells about what happened with some of these necklacing events, and listen to him referring to a miracle. And remember that the police he's talking about are the old supposed apartheid police, the bad white guys, right? They weren't all white. Lots of black policemen, and some of them got necklaced. Some black soldiers were necklaced. So my comment to you is, here you have it from the horse's mouth, from an ANC guy, from a supposed comrade, okay, giving you what really happened. That's clip six, please.
We have comrades today who can come and sit here like I'm sitting and testify to you how, by some miracle, they escaped a necklace, because the tire had already been hung around their neck. Petrol had already been poured. The only thing that we needed was matches. And by some miracle, the police van came and they ran away and he escaped. Now, that...
So by some miracle, the police van came and he escaped being burned to death. Okay. So this is a comrade explaining how the evil white policeman came and saved another comrade. That's that era. So now let's look at some of the leading lights in promoting the necklacing. And I'm going to have you hear a very famous lady talk from the stage. It was in Munsieville in South Africa in 1984. And in April 86, this lady whom you've all heard of, and she was my boss at one point, she's doing the talking. And then you will have an explanation, not from me. You'll have it from your own ex-president, Ronald Reagan, a man for whom I had the deepest, deepest respect. So, clip seven, I give you Winnie Mandela, followed by Ronald Reagan.
Nelson Mandela is serving a term of life imprisonment for sabotage and advocating the overthrow of the South African government. His wife, Winnie Mandela, is able to speak to the media. For foreign consumption, she presents a picture of reasonableness and non-violence.
I have never personally believed in any violence, and no sane person can believe in any violence.
For home consumption...
With our necklaces, we shall liberate this country.
These hands, our power, the people's power. We are not prepared for any...
In this barbaric way of reprisal, a tire is filled with kerosene or gasoline, placed around the neck of an alleged collaborator, and ignited. The victim may be a black policeman, a teacher, a soldier, a civil servant. It makes no difference. The atrocity is designed to terrorize blacks into ending all racial cooperation.
I thought it would be better coming from Ronald Reagan than from me.
Yeah, that's just horrendous.
So, if folks want to know where this comes from, it comes from the party now governing that country. Now you know why Reagan and Daddy Bush, who was then the deputy, the vice president, they put the ANC on the United States Department of State terrorist list, the international list of terrorist organizations. The ANC was entirely correctly put up there after Reagan had made these statements. So the country is living under the thumb of a terrorist organization. What on earth did people expect?
And so when did the ANC come off of the terrorist watch list? I got a pretty good idea, but...
Yeah. Sonny Bush took him off.
No kidding.
2008. One of the parting shots before he left office is, to keep Condoleezza Rice happy. She felt uncomfortable with having to deal with South Africa while its government is on the terrorist list. So he took her off. You know, I didn't really have a war with Dabia, but that's the moment that I realized he wasn't the sharpest pencil in the box.
Yeah, no kidding. And then the ANC has basically been in charge ever since then.
Yes. Now, this is probably the point at which I should raise that date of 2008 again. I said earlier that people refer to the fact that much of the xenophobia stuff started after 2008. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened just before that that was significant in South Africa? Oh, of course. Jacob Zuma, the first Zulu to be president. We got a Zulu president just before that, and the next moment, all this stuff started. Okay, so if you, in a cynical view of recent South African history, the comment would be, when the reign of white folks was terminated in 1994, the first other nation to control things were the Amakosa under Mandela. Mandela was essentially a Xhosa. So was Mbeki. And then in 2007, Zuma pushed Mbeki out, and between 2008 and 2018, the country was ruled over by essentially a Zulu kind of culture with Zulu values. And there you go. I have the greatest respect for the Zulu as a people who can, few people on earth can mobilize themselves like the Zulu. You heard them following orders there earlier. People can dance around the fact, but much of this present mess is Zulu instigated. And as a grouping, the Zulu are not thrilled about having been pushed off the carcass of white civilization. They've had only 8 years at the carcass. They figure they need more. That's the way many people read it. So, you know, the Amakosa had the period from 94 until 2008. The Zulu haven't had 14 years. They've had 10 years. So maybe some of these figure they need a longer chance to eat, you know, like the hyena push the lion off the kill or vice versa. It's only when the two big ones have finished eating that the jackals and the vultures can get their piece. And so the Zulu figure they haven't finished. It's not time for the vultures and the jackal yet. Mm. And that's the picture that lots of folks have of the situation, that they look at this and they shake their heads, and all you can do is pray and hope that the end, when it comes, will be quick. So
let's take one more quick break, and then we'll come back and finish out the top of the hour with our guest, Dr. Harry Billions. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Tears are filling up.
I always have to play that song when we talk about South Africa because it is a mad world. So, but Harry, yeah, in our last 10 minutes, what do we miss?
I would like to do the last little bit about the so-called Mfokane back in the 1816 to 1836. And when I read you just a little section, and then you tell me if you see the connection.
Okay.
Are you guys there?
We are. Sorry.
Okay. Go ahead.
We were listening quietly.
Back in 1816, when the Zulu nation arose, they were led by a guy called Shaka, a very able military leader, trained the guys well. He created the Zulu in every aspect. And time moved on, and he was murdered by one of the usual stream of half-brothers. Because the king has many wives, right? So there's always a production of a line of half-brothers. And number one half-brothers. Number two doesn't count, really. So Shaka had... there was another one that was supposed to inherit the kingdom, but Shaka had him knocked off. So Shaka became the chief. Shaka, a little bit later, he was killed by Ndengane. And it's Ndengane who would end up fighting the white folks. But the following is the description of matters before the whites got there. There was a split between Ndengane and one of his lieutenants, and that lieutenant was in charge of the Kumalu people. His name was Mtsilikazi. And Mtsilikazi was any bit as bloodthirsty and competent as Ndengane. He was clever enough to flee with his followers, defeat a couple of other tribes, absorb them, turn them into good Zulus, and then he fell upon the Tswana people who lived in the interior of South Africa. The Tswana are a relatively peaceful people. There's none of this sort of martial kind of culture of the Zulu. So this now is Robert Moffat, the missionary of the London Missionary Society. I believe I'm quoting my enemy, so Robert Moffat is not my friend in history. This is his description of the Matabele, who are Zulus. He says, "Thus, when they conquered a town, the terrified inhabitants were driven in a mass to the outskirts, when the parents and all the married women were slaughtered on the spot. Such as dared to brave in the defense of their town, their wives and their children, are reserved for a still more terrible death. Dry grass saturated with fat is tied around their naked bodies and then set on fire." Mm. Well, it occurs to me they didn't have tires and gasoline back then. "The youths and girls are loaded as beasts of burden with the spoils of the town to be marched to the homes of the victors. If the town be an isolated position, the helpless infants are either left to perish with hunger or to be devoured by the beasts of prey. Should a suspicion arise in the savage bosom that these helpless innocents may fall into the hands of friends, they will prevent this by collecting them into a fold and, after raising over them a pile of brushwood, apply the flaming torch to it when the town, lately the scene of mirth, becomes a heap of ashes."
Wow.
And there is something special in the last words of Mtsilikazi to Moffat, the man who's just done all this that you heard. Mtsilikazi calls out to Moffat as Moffat gets on his wagon to ride away. Mtsilikazi says, "Pray to your God to keep me from the power of Ndengane," the guy he fled from. Mm. Okay. So none of this is new, guys. It's just, you know, the gasoline is way back when it was fat, now it's gasoline. Way back when it was grass, now it's tires. But you ask me, where does this unbelievable violence come from? I just give you the old missionaries' words about what they wrote, what they saw, what happened, etc. I just figure, you know, you want to understand stuff, go back a little bit in history and stop acting like everything is new. Mm-hmm. So this is where we are. And before the the folks from Zimbabwe and Nigeria and Burundi get all high and mighty and try to find high ground. Don't let me start with them, because I'm going to tell them what their grandpappy did. So it's Africa. It's vicious. It's violent. And its appetite for violence is just beyond what the Northern European or North American culture can process. This is it. Welcome to Africa.
So yeah, it's nothing new. This is basically a cultural.
But it's interesting, because if you look in this country, you know, three or six or seven or, you know, say fewer than a dozen people are killed at a mall or something, which is obviously horrible and ridiculous and senseless. And yet you find out the same day in Chicago, 50 people were shot and a whole bunch of them died. And yet that just gets glossed over. And so maybe this kind of stuff that's happening in South Africa, you know, that's our precursor to those kinds of horrible things. You just start ignoring it. You know, just not talk about it. You know, what is it? Baltimore. You know, all the things going on in Baltimore. Well, you know, we had the mayor of New York City. You know, Tucker Carlson asked him the other night about all the rats and everything. Oh, it's the cleanest it's ever been. We have the lowest crime. It's super clean. People love it. It's awesome.
Say it enough times, it'll be true.
It's never been better. What are you talking about?
Well, I did read to you, I think, on the last show we had, the little bit by that young Frenchman, Lavelin. Remember when he said he was riding on a horse in 1782 in the Eastern Cape of South Africa. And he said, in every part where the natives live entirely unconnected with the whites, their manners are mild and amiable. On the contrary, an acquaintance with the Europeans alters and corrupts their natural character, which amazingly degenerates. He at least he has the decency to add the adjective amazingly. I bet it is amazingly. I mean, there's just a thing in the liberal mind that does not connect. It cannot process reality. It is a reality machine. From an engineering black box perspective, anything you put into a liberal mind will get screwed up.
That's astrophysics at its finest.
No, but seriously, you know, there's all these cute little management experiments you can do. You sit people in a row of chairs and then you let them function like a business. One guy is producing, then another guy is making sales, et cetera, et cetera. And then you inject some or other disruption in there and you see how these guys start to oscillate and they ring like a guitar. You know, it's just noise signals up and down. And after a while, it settles down again. You can do that kind of thing. You can treat people, collections of people, like an engineering black box, because I can simulate that behavior with a inductor, a capacitor, and a resistor. And that's it. I need just three components in electronic engineering to show you what happens to a bunch of people at a heap. And I'm telling you that if you put anything into a box marked liberal, you put in a clean square signal on the one, or a perfect sinusoidal signal on the left-hand side, what comes out on the other side is completely warped.
Well, and you've given ample examples, you know, today. So I realize we're not going to fix South Africa. Oh, yeah, spoiler alert here in the last 2 minutes. We're not fixing South Africa on this program because it's kind of a heavy, kind of a heavy lift. Oh, yeah, we're out of time. That's it. We had the fix. We just didn't have time. But honestly, this is just continuing to go downhill.
Yeah, and you're right. There is really no solution on the horizon right now. It's spiraling down.
And sucking in more more pieces. I mean, it's not limiting itself to South Africa.
The good thing about this last week is that other African countries have become outraged. It's so bad. It's so bad that other countries in Africa are upset. And the unique thing about Ghana is that Ghana was the first African, black African sub-Sahara country to get independence. They started learning earliest. Today, the Ghanaians have produced people who are proper economists, and like George Ayité, he's trained people like Dambisa Moyo, who's, I think she's Zambian, but she was his student. That makes at least two people in black Africa who can think about economics. And they're asking questions like, you know, but don't people want to work? Don't they understand they have to work? And you hear the ordinary Ghanaian saying, you know, these people should work. So you don't have to spend too much time on the people from Ghana to get them to behave. But in South Africa, it's a lost cause.
Yeah. And as long as the rest of the world ignores it and or feeds it, it'll continue to spiral downhill. So honestly, like everything else, education is always really the key. And that is one thing the rest of us can do out here is spread the word and help them get smart.
The ANC told them to burn their schools down.
Yeah, that's not good. All right, we're out. Sorry, Harry. We got to do this again. We got to have part 12. Thanks a million. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.